I am the best wrestler in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day because Paul Heyman saw something in me that nobody else wanted to admit. I've grabbed so many of Vincent K. McMahon's imaginary brass rings that it's finally dawned on me that they're just that. They're completely imaginary. The only thing that's real is me, and the fact that day in and day out, for almost 6 years, I have proved to everybody in the world that I am the best on this microphone, in that ring, even at commentary. Nobody can touch me.
Here to drop another pipe bomb on wrestling's past. I am your CM Jew, and I welcome you to another fabulous episode of CM Jew Wrestling Reviews. On this episode, we go back to where the show of shows, the Showcase of the Immortals, all began. WrestleMania 1 back in 1985. And of course, for such a tremendous pay-per-view, I have to have a special guest. He runs the tricycle, right?
Yeah, tricycle offense.
Tricycle offense. I want to make sure I get it right. Tricycle offense website, which features many reviews, including wrestling. And he is the best damn rapper in West Virginia, known as B-A-Clean-Collin. I'm getting that right, right?
No, you kind of slaughtered it. It's okay. It's Kellen Conley. Kellen Conley.
Hey, look, it is a long-standing tradition for me to butcher anybody's name that comes
okay.
on here. Just
well, then I'm honored. I'm honored by that.
Just ask anybody who's come to my podcast. But damn, you guys listening there do not know how long it's taken me to get this man on my podcast.
I'd say about 2.5 years.
About that. We tried to do comic book crazy. We tried to do my animation podcast, I think. We tried several of my other podcasts, and things just kept happening.
Yeah, I've had an interesting life. Every time Tom hits me up, he's like, hey, CM Jew hits me up. He's like, hey, let's do a podcast. I'm like, sure. And then, like, day of, I'm like, I can't. Sorry. I was shocked to get this invite still.
I'll say this. At least you're honest about it. There are people out there that won't be like, I've had people who've just not shown up before.
Well, I'd try not to do that to anybody, especially if you're going to take the time to invite me on your podcast. I mean, it's the least I can do to at least make an effort, at least give you a valid reason why I'm not on the podcast at that time. So
yeah. So let's start. When did you get into wrestling?
When did I get into wrestling? I was a wee child. I came up in the, I'm going to date myself, but I came up in the Superstars era of Saturday morning wrestling. So pretty much Hulk Hogan was my introduction into.
You're not dating yourself. Same period as me, 1980.
Yeah. So around that time, it was Hogan and Roddy Piper and Junkyard Dog and all of them. And then the Superstars cartoon, the Wrestling Cartoon Express, I think it was called. That was on. I had the little rubber action figures that didn't move. But if you pulled their arms too far, their arm would like tear because they were literally rubber.
I think I still have Hillbilly Jim somewhere.
I had Hogan bald before he was literally bald in wrestling. because I played with mine so much.
Yes. Oh, I remember that. Yes, yes. I came from that era, too. Hiro, did you get the first WWF soundtrack and, like, do all the entrances in your living room like I did?
No, I didn't take it that far. I was just mostly a Hogan guy when I was a kid. And then a little thing called the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles happened and kind of derailed my interest a little bit in wrestling.
And so, I was interested in both. I don't see what the separation is there.
Right. I mean, the Turtles became my world, and so I just kind of stopped watching wrestling because it was all about the Turtles for me, especially once the movie came out. And then I didn't come back to wrestling until the Attitude Era, Monday Night Wars era, pretty much.
Yeah. I remember I got the WWF soundtrack, and I literally, one of my favorite things to do was to basically do every entrance. So I would come in like the Ultimate Warrior. I would do Macho Man. Of course, the last track on there is Hulk Hogan. So
yeah. Now, I would make my dad go to the video store, and I would be like, he would give me like the pay-per-views on VHS. And so, like, I think one of the last memories I have as a child of wrestling was Hogan getting crushed by Earthquake. And so I made Dad go get me the VHS where Hogan got to fight Earthquake and get his revenge. And that was, like, one of the last things I remember from that time period.
My dad worked for the mail service.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things he would occasionally get is he worked the big trucks, which means sometimes he would get his hands on the copy of basically, I guess, the videotape that would go to the small stations.
Yeah.
I was too young to understand, but looking back, I figure that's probably what it was, but, like, he would deliver them to the stations. And so he would get his hand on copies of the pay-per-views and stuff. So I remember getting to watch WrestleMania 3 and getting to watch, like, Undertaker face Hogan.
Oh, you lucky dog.
both the first and second time, both the time he defeated him and when Hogan won the title back.
Right, that was like Tuesday in Texas or something like that.
That was Tuesday in Texas, and then there was a repeat. I think it was Survivor Series, another big pay-per-view where he got it back, or vice versa.
Right.
But no, I pretty much stayed with wrestling until Hogan left the WWE, and then I followed him to WCW, and then the NWO happened, and I lost interest in wrestling, and I didn't come back till 99. So
you didn't like the NWO at all?
I was a Hogan fan, and I liked Hogan as a good guy, and I just wasn't a big fan of the NWO.
Okay.
So,
well,
I mean, in retrospect, I missed a lot because I missed the Attitude Era.
The Attitude Era, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I came back late in 1999. In fact, what brought me back was Hogan came back to the yellow and red.
yeah, he did. In fact, I remember that because my dad we weren't even watching it anymore. And he's like, hey, Hogan's going to have his yellow and red back on tonight. I'm like, yeah, let me turn this on. And I was actually kind of pumped to see Hogan back in the good old golden red.
It was one of the luckiest things for me because I just happened to be switching channels and I fell upon Nitro and it was the main event and Hogan came out like, when did you come back to the yellow and red? And pretty much I've been watching ever since. So
you've just had like a brief period of like maybe, let's see, Hogan left, NWO 96. Was 96. And so you only had a 3-year break in between your wrestling fandom.
But I didn't get to watch like the wrestling wars because we didn't have cable in the early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
I had cable, but I didn't even realize that there was a wrestling show like Monday Night Wars or Monday Night Raw like in 94 stuff. So. It wasn't until about 95 that I just watched Nitro at that point. I didn't even know there was a Monday Night Raw.
Oh, okay. See, what I used to do is since I didn't really watch, like I had an early bedtime when I was younger, so I didn't really watch Nitro or Raw or anything like that. But on Saturdays, I would always watch TBS Saturday Night, and that came on at like 6 o'clock till 8, so I was always good to watch that, and I would kind of catch up on stuff then, because they would just sit there and show everything that happened on Nitro. And then they'd have a couple of just regular matches in between. So that's how I stayed on top of all that.
but that's the great thing about the network is we can go back and watch all that. By the way, have you reached the point yet with your family to where they come into the house and they're like, my God, you're still watching wrestling?
No, my wife actually is becoming more tolerant. Like, at first she was like, why are you watching wrestling? But now she's actually, like, making comments. She's like, I don't like Randy Orton, and is CM Punk going to come back and stuff like that? So she actually is kind of getting into it, and she likes certain things. But then she'll sit there, and sometimes she'll just be like, I don't know why we're watching this. And I'm like, I don't either. And I just keep watching.
Actually, I probably should have preferenced that I meant upon getting to WWE Network.
Oh, the network I really haven't been that bad with, because I've only had the trials. I haven't really committed to the full time, and plus, since one buddy of mine I've let him use my Netflix streaming forever, he's let me use his WWE Network login, so it's kind of a trade off. So yeah. I haven't gotten to the point where I've been obsessively watching wrestling yet, but we were watching WrestleMania 1 this morning, like first thing eating cereal, and I was like, look at Mean Gene, he's singing the national anthem, and she sat there and watched it.
We're gonna talk about that in a second.
Yeah.
Oh my god. No, it's literally like every time my mom comes home, I have the WWE Network on. I was like, you're watching wrestling again? It's like, yeah.
Why not?
It's to the point to where, like, oh, mom's home. Okay, gotta turn it off. Until she goes to sleep, then I turn it back on
wrestling. There's just so much stuff on there.
There's the Halloween Havocs, all the gimmick matches WCW did, especially in the early 90s.
I was watching World War III, like, 98 or something. I think it was the year that Nash won it. So
I was watching the year Randy Savage won. I think it was 95.
Oh, okay.
95 or 94.
Cool. I say I haven't watched that one, but I was I like the first match was like Glacier and whatever Rhino's name in WCW was. Oh wow.
Oh god, Glacier.
Glacier. Sub Zero.
Yep. Sadly enough, I actually like that wrestler enough that one of my main wrestlers I create whenever I get a new WWE game is called Glacier.
Oh, really? Okay. Yes. There's nothing wrong with that. See, Glacier, everybody deserves fans.
So with that, I think we mentioned it. We're going to talk about WrestleMania 1, where the Showcase of the Immortals happened. Are you looking forward to this year's WrestleMania?
I am actually getting pumped about WrestleMania finally. Like, the past 2 weeks have really gotten me there. Before I was kind of iffy about WrestleMania. I was on the fence.
And I can understand that. And I've been wearing, I think one interesting thing is that you don't like WrestleMania 29. I loved last year's WrestleMania.
Now, why do you like WrestleMania 29 so much, CMG?
Well, to be honest, I think it was everything that WrestleMania 28 should have been.
Whoa. Now, WrestleMania 28, I feel like, was perfect. Now, I'm biased because I was there. But still, I mean, I really don't have a problem with WrestleMania 28 at all.
I mean, WrestleMania 28, you had the awesome match between Taker and Punk. And with Punk proving that you don't have to win a match to be like a star in it and just come completely over. You had Triple H versus Lesnar. That was just a fight that was fun to watch. You had Daniel Bryan actually winning and not being screwed in 9 seconds.
18 seconds.
18 seconds. And by the way, the whole story, like, teasing another 18-second bout and then having Daniel Bryan win. So having him win a match. The Mark Henry, all the matches were at least as good as advertised, if not better, I felt, at WrestleMania. And for that matter, John Cena actually defeating The Rock, which is what should have happened at WrestleMania 28.
Man, I can't get into this with you because we're going to not do a WrestleMania 1 podcast. I disagree because I felt Lesnar Triple H 1 was very boring and that Lesnar spent a lot of time doing suplexes that was unnecessary. I felt like Cena Rock 2 was extremely boring and very predictable compared to the first one. I loved the first one 10 times more. The Punk Taker match was epic. I love everything about that. Daniel Bryan and Kane getting the win, that was cool and everything, but I mean I was there when the Yes Movement began. You don't understand. He gets kicked in the face and loses in 18 seconds, and he's going out mad at AJ or whatever. But as soon as we got to the stadium and leading up to that moment and even the rest of the night in Miami, everybody's just going, yes, yes, yeah. And that's just when he's sitting there saying no, like trying to get people to, like, not do the yes chant anymore. And he was so over that when he lost, the stadium went even more crazy and became even more of a fan of Daniel Bryan that night. And Jericho Punk at WrestleMania 28, like, there was so many near falls where Punk should have tapped out to Jericho. It's not even funny. And then you have the Hell in a Cell match of Taker and Triple H and Shawn, especially when you see Taker take all those chair shots. It's just insane because there's no way that, like, it's that was a match where...
The Hell in a Cell match and the Punk and Jericho match saved that WrestleMania. But the first Rock and Cena was good up until the ending. And I think those two matches are an example of how an ending to the match can hurt and help a match. More importantly, you also have to give props for the fact that The Rock, for most of the second match, was injured with a torn abdomen.
Yes. I mean, and that is impressive, especially considering that the news first came out the day after WrestleMania that he just quit and was leaving before he was able to say, no, I'm injured, and they cleared it up on Raw. But I kept, like, all day, Rock left New York. He's not going to be at wherever the night after WrestleMania was at. I think it was at the Barclays. And, Rock just left, and he's mad and all this stuff. And then it came out that he actually had an abdomen injury. Yeah. So, it is impressive on Rock's part knowing that in hindsight.
And the thing to look at it, and this is how what I've always said, is that I found that match to just be a throwback to the days of Bruno Sammartino, to whereas I'm just going to hit you with bombs all match long. And that's what it was. And I actually liked the sort of throwback style it was. It was entertaining for what it was. There was no way they were going to be more technical and have a more Texas catch can style than what Punk or Taker was going to have. So what they did instead was try to be their own match, and that's why I thought it was better than what happened the year before. But let's get off that before you. I can feel your steamy mad.
Oh, that's just the way I.
So let's get into it. WrestleMania in 1985. And let's get into it.
Let's do it.
In 1972, a crack commando unit was sent to prison by a military court for a crime they didn't commit. These men promptly escaped from a maximum security stockade to the Los Angeles underground. Today, still wanted by the government, they survive as soldiers of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can hire the A-Team.
WrestleMania 1985 with your commentators Gorilla Monsoon and Jesse the Body Ventura, with interviewers Mean Gene Oakland and Lord Alfred Hayes. ring announcers would be the legendary the Fink, Howard Finkel, with a guest announcer for the main event Billy Martin. Referees would be Jack Lutz, Dick Kroll. Doesn't he have a show on Comedy Central?
I think he does. Yes.
Joey Morella. Oh, I wonder what he thinks of his nephew. And the legendary man, Pat Patterson. Special guest timekeeper for the main event would be Liberace. Special guest referee would be Muhammad Ali. And special guest dancers for Liberace would be the Rockettes. I guess before we get into the matches proper,
okay,
we have to talk about Mean Gene's national anthem.
I had completely forgot about him singing this anthem because I saw it years ago on DVD, Watch WrestleMania 1. And then when I had it on this morning and he started belting it out, it was terrible.
Oh, my God.
It was embarrassing. Like, they should cut it out. They should, like, literally cut that part out of WrestleMania history for Mean Gene.
I think that's where the whole special guest singers, pop singers coming in to sing the national anthem came from for WrestleMania. Because in the first one, they had Mean Gene, like, okay, we're never doing this again.
Right. Because I think it was, I don't remember, I always thought it was America the Beautiful they sang. And I don't remember if it was, if Aretha sang it at WrestleMania 3 first, or Ray Charles did it at WrestleMania 3, or if...
I think Ray Charles did it at WrestleMania 2.
Okay, Ray Charles did it first at WrestleMania 2, okay.
Yeah, because it was... I remember it, them singing it at WrestleMania 2.
Okay. Much better tradition than Mean Gene leading the crowd, and the crowd laughing at him the whole time.
Yeah.
And then I love Monsoon's comment, I think, or was it Jesse? Might have been Body's comment. He's like, that Robert Goulet couldn't compete with Mean Gene. awesome.
And by the way, I love the commentators throughout this entire pay-per-view. Gorilla Monsoon and Jesse. And, you know, here's the thing. Jesse, the Body Ventura, is supposed to be sort of playing the heel commentator.
Right.
And yet he plays it straight, and yet only he could do that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like when I first got my Hulk Hogan Anthology DVD that I wore out and still watch all the time, and I watched this match on there, and, like, the early 80s matches again for first time in years, Monsoon and Ventura were, like, the ultimate team. Like, next to Lawler and JR. Like,
yeah.
I could listen to them all day and stuff. They're just perfect together.
But the very first match is Tito Santana versus the man who's debuting in the WWE, the Executioner.
With his Spider-Man mask.
Yeah. Well, the yellow and black one.
Yeah.
Let's not get into Spider-Man, because we can talk about being here all day.
Amen.
But, yeah, I mean, it was a squash match, but, you know, it ran for a pretty decent time. The time I have is 4 minutes and 50 seconds.
Yeah.
Santana wins with a figure four lock. I like the story there. It was setting up that he's trying to go after Greg Valentine's Intercontinental title, who also does the figure four. So he was sending a message to Greg.
Yeah.
So I
like
that storyline there.
I mean, I was actually really impressed with this because I was like, because I just rewatched everything this morning. And I was like, man, Tito is, I mean, not that I didn't think Tito was good before, but I expected this to be like a really crappy match and Tito go over really easy. But there were some spots where the Executioner did have some nice little moves and stuff in there, but obviously it was to put over Tito because we see him later in the event.
It always helps, you know, it's one thing I don't like about squash matches where, you know, the wrestlers are just completely bulldozing opponents. I like for there to be a little, you know, where the person who's being squashed shows a little something. And I think it makes the person who is doing the squashing make a little strong, be a little stronger.
No, I agree with that, yeah.
Well, speaking of squash matches, our next match is the match that they lie only took 9 seconds. It really took 24 seconds. we have King Kong Bundy with the Mouth of the South Jimmy Hart versus Special Delivery Jones.
But Special Delivery. One of the things that my wife said to me this morning was when they were cutting the Mean Gene's promos, and they go Special Delivery Jones, and he starts talking. She was like, I did not expect him to talk like that.
but as we said, squash match.
Oh, yeah. Real squash.
In more ways than one.
What was that? That was two moves. That's less than Hogan and Cena.
Well, technically three, but it's with Delivery Jones.
Excuse me.
Runs towards him, grabs the bear hug, slams him in the corner, performs the avalanche into the corner, and then performs the splash.
Right.
So technically three moves, but yeah.
Bundy was, you forget when you watch these things. Like, Bundy was a massive dude. Like, even, like, on 2K14, he looks big. But looking at it in real life, I'm like, man. Like, is Bundy still alive? I cannot remember if he's still alive or not.
I would have to look it up. Continue, and I'll look it up real quick.
Okay, yeah. But he's just this giant dude, and it's like, when you're a kid and stuff, like, unless you're like, you watched all the way through, so you, of course, probably remember how big Bundy was, but just seeing this guy, it's like, yeah, that's the kind of guy that Vince loves right there. Because Vince loves those big, super strong guys. And Bundy just looks like he should be the WWE champion at all times. He just has that look. WWF champion, sorry.
He is actually still alive. He actually doesn't live that far from me. He lives in Glassboro, New Jersey.
Oh, okay.
I live in Trenton, so.
Nice. You should go knock on his door. Like,
oh, yes. He'll enjoy that.
I want to revenge Special Delivery Jones's loss at WrestleMania 1.
But, you know, if we're a squash match, it was a fun match to watch. Mm-hmm. You didn't expect Special Delivery Jones to be squashed.
No, I mean, he looked like he knew what he was doing when he came to the ring. He looked like he was solid, and I honestly can't say I've seen any other Special Delivery Jones matches. So it looked like they were at least have a little offense or something, but no, it was all Bundy.
Yeah. Well, a match that would be a little bit longer, not as quite as long as the first match, though, would be Ricky the Dragon Steamboat versus Matt Bourne. The man who was born to be Doink the Clown.
Yes, he was. Good old Matt Bourne and Doink.
No.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say no relation to Eric Bourne or
Jason Bourne.
Jason Bourne.
Or the Bourne Supremacy or the Identities or any of the movies. Just cover all the bases.
I was trying to make the wrestling connection. It is Matt Bourne that.
Matt Bourne is who he wrestled.
Yeah, but I'm saying, no, he's been injured so long, and I've forgotten his name.
Oh, Evan Bourne.
Evan Bourne, thank you.
Oh, I hate that guy.
Why? Because he's been injured so long?
He was just one of those guys that they pushed really hard because of his ability and never made his character interesting, I felt like. So that was my issue with him, nothing else.
Okay.
All creative fault.
Yep. As everything is.
Yes.
But this was a really good match.
It was a really good match, and I actually thought that that Steamboat would come out and probably have I didn't think it'd be a straight squash match, but I didn't think he'd have that much trouble with him. But it was a damn good match, and there was good spots by everybody, and then that finishing move Steamboat pulled off. It was impressive for back then, because, I mean, he moved from the ring, like where he was at in the ring, to the top rope to the back down so quickly and then finished him off. It was just a reminder of how awesome Steamboat was, especially back then, even before he got to WrestleMania 3 and stole the show with Macho.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. And also interesting to note, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat is one of several individuals who, again, we're going to talk about, because a lot of people will talk about how Starrcade 83, or at least I've heard from some people, that Starrcade 83 was a better pay-per-view than WrestleMania 1.
Blasphemy.
And there are several wrestlers, I know, blasphemy. And trust me, I think so too, as I'll get to a little bit later. But Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, along with Rick the Hammer Valentine, Roddy Piper, Bob Orton, and there's one more person. Let me try to find them. I think it's just those four are four who were also in Starrcade 83. Roddy Piper's in a dog collar match with Greg the Hammer Valentine.
Gotta love those matches.
But this was just a good, solid match, great high-flying spot to end it.
I think it was, because especially after that squash match that we had right before then, it was nice, a little change of pace to have a decent-sized match, decent lengthwise match, and then have it finished with the hero going over, of course.
Yeah. And by the way, one thing to bring up, because it came evident, two things. One, it came evident, they keep going back to Lord Alfred Hayes, and in the next, because after this match, they go back to Lord Alfred Hayes, and it's Johnny Valens says, get out of the way! Because they literally walk in front of the camera, it's like, coordinate this?
Right. And I kept saying that this morning. I was like, why is everybody walking in front of Alfred Hayes? That's just messed up. And then my wife's like, well, I think they want them to kind of do that. I was like, no, because, like, I'm pretty sure it was Matt Bourne. After he left he lost the Steamboat, he came back and started to walk in front of him. Then he's like, stop. Then he went behind him. So it was, I was like, man, I think they definitely, I'm sure Vince would have
I think you were trying to create photobombing. I think that's what they were trying to do.
Something else Vince wants to take credit for. I understand that.
But the other thing is, I made mention of Starrcade 83.
Yeah.
And we were talking about the commentators earlier. I forgot to mention this. One of the reasons why this pay-per-view is better than Starrcade is that Gorilla Monsoon actually pronounces suplexes correctly by calling them a suplex. At Starrcade 83, Gordon Soley keeps calling it a souffle.
Nuh-uh.
I swear to God. And here's Ric Flair with a beautiful souffle.
Oh, man.
It's like, what are you talking about?
Oh, speaking of strange slang for commentators, I noticed early on here that I believe it was Monsoon kept saying, he goes for the Pearl Harbor. He goes for the Pearl Harbor. And I understand that he meant like the sneak attack or something like that. But I was like, I don't know if you'd get away with that today. Like, can you imagine Cole would be like, oh, he Pearl Harbored him, or oh, he 9/11'd him or something. That's just horrible.
Well, it was a slang term for, you know, and it was common back in the day for, you know, attacking somebody from behind, a sneak attack.
And,
so.
And that just and shows that the 80s are way cooler than what we live in today.
Because children weren't that dumb.
Yes, yes. Amen.
But the next match we'll finally get to is David Sammartino versus with the living legend Bruno Sammartino versus Brutus the Barber Beefcake. Well, he hadn't had the barber gimmick yet, but Brutus Beefcake with Johnny Valiant.
I don't know if you saw one of my tweets this morning, but after I saw Johnny Valiant do his little promo, I was like, I will now be known as Luscious Johnny Valiant. Because I don't know, I love old school wrestling promos. And then he's I don't know what he's wearing a watch. You're talking about Bruno. He's like, I don't know if he's talking about the match or his watch, but we're going to go out there and stomp on his head or something like that. And man, this match was boring for like the first 5 minutes. I can't even lie. Well, is this literally Bruno's real kid?
I guess I'll look it up real quick, but it was actually the second longest match of. Yeah, it says right here. Apparently, he's the son of the former champ Bruno Sammartino. So
okay, I wasn't sure because I forget like back in the WCW 90s, like Flair had kids running around all over the place, and not all of them were his kids. I thought so. I think David was, but I feel like there was another one. Maybe I'm wrong. But man, I'm not that he couldn't wrestle, but the match is so boring because Brutus is like evading him, and then he would come in and hit him, and David would run after him, and David didn't look like he's in the best shape, so he was getting tired. I'm like, oh God, this match is never going to end.
It was an interesting match. It was interesting that it ends in a no contest.
Oh, that I don't agree. I called bullshit like it was live this morning. I don't know if I can cuss or not. My bad.
Dude, hey, this is an explicit show.
Okay, good. Good to know.
I probably should have told you earlier.
but that doesn't mean I'm going to – whatever. Anyway, back to what I was saying. So there was a point in the match where I think David had a – or maybe I'm thinking about the next match. But – David goes out the ring, and then Valiant comes over, body slams him first, like, and attacks him. And then as soon as Valiant picks him up, you see Bruno coming around, ready to attack Valiant and everything, which is the exciting part of the match. When Bruno gets in there, and it's clear that Bruno should have been wrestling at the event because he looked sharp as ever. And then the ref calls a double disqualification. I'm like, no, he got attacked first. That's clearly their disqualification. And I think Monsoon started to disagree with it, and then they just, like, shut up about it.
By far, this is the worst match of the night.
Yeah, I agree. Yes. Because Bruno didn't even look impressive at all. Like, Bruno just looked like a scaredy cat out there. He looked like Fandango last year at WrestleMania.
But our next match is the JYD, mm-hmm. the Junkyard Dog, versus Greg the Hammer Valentine, the current Intercontinental Champion with Jimmy Hart. For the WWF Intercontinental Championship.
This was a good one. Because I forgot how much I love Junkyard Dog until his music hit. And I realized he's the first wrestler to come out and have music at WrestleMania 1, which is kind of awesome. And then he just came out and did it, like that gimmick. I mean, it might have been a little racist back then, but we understand now that he was always one of my favorites when I was young.
You know, I always liked the gimmick. I guess I'm one of those oblivious people that never sees. I mean,
I didn't realize it as a kid either. This is the stuff I've read recently in recent years that, oh, Junkyard, the chains, and he kind of looks like a runaway slave and stuff like that. I'm like, oh, man, really?
I took the change. I took the whole change from that he was from the Junkyard.
Right, that he was a dog.
Yeah.
Yeah, people take things too far.
I know. But, yeah, oh, great match. I didn't realize it was only 6 minutes and 55 seconds long.
It was a shorter match, yeah, because I got into it almost immediately, and then I felt like there was that point where JYD was about to possibly win, because I didn't remember who won this match, and then the hammer stole it from him, and I was like, no, that's crap. And then I'm glad that they restarted the match and gave JYD the disqualification.
Well, they did. Well, Tino Santana comes in, and they argue with the ref, and the ref shows where his feet were on the ropes, and he concurs, I guess, with the judge, and they decide to restart the match and tells Hammer to come out, and he won't come in, so he counts him out.
Well, Hammer didn't even look like he knew what was going on, though. He looked confused until, like, he got to eight, and it looked like he wanted to come in, and he's just like, I don't care, I'm not going to lose the belt anyway.
Well, I think, like, Jimmy Hart held him back, but I love the storytelling aspect of that. That was great storytelling.
It really was, because I'm sure they went... I'm sure this feud wasn't over from here because it was disqualification. So they probably went on to wrestle some more matches, like, based off this. But a lot happened in that 6 minutes, and that's something that I appreciate as someone who really watches wrestling for the stories that are involved as well.
Yeah. And, you know, and again, this is where you really see that WWE style coming out and being born, that idea of the stories that really differentiated the WWE, aka the WWF at this time,
yes,
from all the other promotions.
Yeah, it really did, because of course they had the TV exposure, so they could had that aspect to put in there too. I mean, WCW didn't quite exist yet. I think it was all territories. World Championship Wrestling didn't really come around till like the late 80s as far as the title, when because WCW did show stuff on Saturday nights, but it was just easier for WWF to tell stories and take their times with feuds and everything like that.
Well, the next match is Nikolai Volkoff and the Iron Sheik with Classy Freddie Blassie, versus the U.S. Express of Mike, I'm going to have a son called Bo Dallas, and Bray Wyatt Rotundo, and the legend Barry Windham, the current champions, with Lou Albano for the WWF Tag Team Championship.
Good old Lou Albino.
Good old Mike Rotundo, and thank you for your son.
Yes, especially Bray right now, who is
yes
making every Raw, every single chance he comes on. Like, he's like the biggest heel face ever. Face heel. I just made a new wrestling term. He's a face heel.
Yeah. But this was a great match. Great back and forth. Mike Rotundo and Barry Windham looked great. Great heel work by the Sheik and Volkoff.
Oh, the Sheik is always great at being a heel, though. He's still a heel on Twitter.
Yes, yes. And, of course, this is just a legendary match, the classic, you know, with the Sheik grabbing Freddie's cane and winning the match that way. But it was just a great back and forth match and an ending I don't think anybody expected.
No, I mean, because it was the first real tag team match of the night, and you look at the names, and it's like, how are these guys going to work together and stuff like that? But they really put everything together, and it was I was thoroughly entertained by the match. I was happy to see it go down the way it did, even though the Sheik isn't one of my favorite people ever, but it was still good.
But even today, to somebody who's never seen WrestleMania 1, it would be a great surprise because, you know, at WrestleMania, it's usually where the good guys win.
Oh, yeah. If we're talking about younger people, like younger fans, younger members of WWE Universe, they do. At WrestleMania, normally the faces do win. So it was definitely different to see the heels come out on top in this one.
Yeah. So, and it was just all around. I'll be honest, it's my second favorite match of the night.
Well, are we going to get to your first next, or your first last?
Well, we'll have to see.
Okay.
But definitely not next, considering what it was. The next match was Andre the Giant, the Eighth Wonder of the World, versus Big John Studd, with the Weasel Bobby Heenan in a $15,000 Body Slam Challenge. And it's strange to think of $15,000 then and now.
Yes. Very, very true. I'll admit, this match is not that great, like, from a technical aspect. They sit there and they're trying to body slam each other and it's not working. But then eventually Andre wears down the knees and gets Stud over. And Stud does not look that hard to body slam. I think I could body slam Stud right now.
I will say this. I did find it interesting to see Andre throwing martial arts kicks. It's what he could call martial arts kicks to the knees.
The sad thing is about Andre is, like, the WWF got big in the 80s, and then we know Andre, like, from WrestleMania 1 until he retired in the early 90s, and then Princess Bride, and unfortunately passed away. Now, his heyday was in the 70s, though. I would love to see some of those 70s Andre matches, because there's so few of them that I've actually honestly
seen. I think some of them may be on the network, or they're probably going to be on the network.
At some point, yeah.
Well, if you go into In-Ring and you go like to or the Vault,
you can search
and you go
people,
to WWE
can't.
Old School.
Yeah,
they should be there.
Okay,
that's where they're more than likely going to be.
Well, I would love to see some of those matches because Andre was pretty athletic back in the day, and then this is like Andre on his like I'm big and Vince will pay me to show up pretty much. Not that he didn't put his effort out there, but you know what I mean.
Oh no, of course not. But, yeah, for what it was, it's second worst match of the night. I mean, just boring. I mean, I know everybody loves Andre, but it's like, that doesn't mean he necessarily puts the best matches on.
You know who was the real star of the match, though?
Bobby Heenan.
Bobby the Brain Heenan, yes.
He's always the real. I just love the interview where he's like, take a look at that, Mean Gene. Don't touch that.
Brain was amazing. Like, I never hated anything Brain did. Even when he's on WCW doing commentary, he'd still say the most hilarious stuff. And then you could hear, Shivani and Tanay be like, you can't say that. And like, I'll say what I want.
I can still remember because I watched Road Wild 1999.
Oh, yeah.
Off our site. And I don't know if you listened to the episode yet, but we talked about it on there to where, Chris Benoit is whipping DDP and Bobby the Brain Heenan asks Shivani, did your dad ever whip you? Yeah, well, go in there and eat some more. Mike, today, did your dad whip you? Like, yes, he did. It's like, well, call him. You need some more. Tony Schiavone, did your dad ever whip you? It's like, no, well, get in there. You need some. And then I think it's Mike today who asked, like, did your dad ever whip you? And he goes, I couldn't pay him enough.
Wow. Brain. I hope he's in the hall. He should be in the hall by now.
He is in the hall.
Okay, good. Good for you, Bobby.
So, our next match of the evening,
yes, sir,
is Wendi Richter with her manager, Cindy Lauper, versus Lana Kai with the Fabulous Moolah, the current champion for the WWF Women's Championship.
Yes.
You know, this is a pretty good women's match.
Compared to some of the matches we get today, absolutely. Especially when you have Moolah, who went on to bigger and better things in Attitude Era, along with Mae Young. Yep. Who, it was a good match. I mean,
well, let's be honest, the Diva matches are getting better.
The last 2 weeks I've watched the Divas matches, I've been very happy with what I've seen on Raw. So I can't even lie.
I mean, when Naomi's doing a RVD-style split-legged moonsault.
And nailing it like, perfectly.
Yes.
With one bad eye at that. So, you go, Naomi.
But this was a good match. I love the switch body splash finish. I thought that worked well. Obviously, a big part of this match was Cindy Lauper. Again, she was a big part of the Rock and Roll sort of wrestling connection,
yes,
that was going on.
A big part of the reason that WrestleMania was so huge and WWF moved to the mainstream in the early 80s.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, what did you think of the match, though? I mean, what? Anything else you liked about it?
I just was wowed by the technical wrestling of it because you don't see, it wasn't that long of a match, but you just don't see the women really get that time like they did in this match. I mean, it was only 6 minutes, but I feel like a normal Divas match lasts 3 minutes anymore. And I mean, it, just the fact that Richter and Kai was able to stay with it that long, yeah. 6 minutes was very impressive, I thought.
Yeah. Considering that most people go to the bathroom when a Diva match comes on these days.
I went to the bathroom at Elimination Chamber when AJ wrestled, I ain't going to lie, but I came back in time to see the finish.
I don't think anybody would blame you. Well, I think that brings us to our main event for the evening, featuring guest ring announcer Billy Martin, guest timekeeper Liberace, which who the fuck brings Liberace to a wrestling match?
Vincent Kennedy McMahon.
Only him. and, of course, the legendary champ Muhammad Ali as the special guest referee, who would be on the outside. Our main event features Hulk Hogan and future WWE Hall of Famer Mr. T with Jimmy the Superfly Snuka versus Roddy Piper, Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff with Ace Cowboy Bob Orton.
Or Randy's dad.
Yes. Well, is he still alive? Last I saw of him, Undertaker was choke slamming him into its casket.
He is still alive, as far as I know. Yes. Oh man, this main event was this main event was more spectacle than wrestling.
But it was fun, and I enjoyed it, and it was my favorite match tonight.
Oh yeah, absolutely. There's no way that it's not. I mean, you have, I'm going to assume, both of our favorite wrestler of all time, Hulk Hogan, involved. Like, yes. Hogan came back on Raw a couple weeks ago. I squealed like a little girl. You know, I knew he was going to be on there. I kept hoping he would come out at the Rumble. It didn't happen. But still, Hogan, like, I love Hogan so much that I can only watch him in a WWE setting. I barely watched TNA when he first went there. And I kind of kept track to make sure he was okay. Like, just kind of checked on, like, say you have a, I don't know, like a fish that doesn't need fit a whole lot. So you just kind of check on every now and then. That's what I would do with Hogan at TNA. And now that he's back and hosting WrestleMania, I'm like totally pumped. Like, Hogan is my dude. That is my guy over anybody, even Punk, who I've become such a fan of over the past few years.
Yes, yes. I think we all have a nostalgic feel for Hogan. I just don't want him to wrestle anymore for safety reasons.
No.
Among others.
I agree wholeheartedly, and I really hope that. Like, I can deal with him throwing a punch, pushing somebody out of the ring, but don't do anything crazy and try to throw that leg drop. Please don't. No atomic leg drops anymore, Hulk.
No.
But, I want to give props to soon-to-be-inducted Mr. T in this match.
Oh, he rocked this match.
He did. He was the unsung hero, I thought.
Well, you know, and he did pretty good hip tosses and body slams, and, you know, he was fully engaged, which is more than you can say for when any other, like, celebrity really comes on anymore, for the most part.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a very short list of, like, celebrities that have come in to actually wrestle matches that actually do good work. I think Lawrence Taylor's one of them.
Yeah.
Mr. T's one of them.
Maria Menounos?
Yeah, she had a decent match at...
She had a couple moves at Mania 28.
But I thought that was Kelly Kelly's best match, though.
I'd never liked Kelly Kelly, and I have to agree with you, yes. Absolutely.
I hate that everybody hated Kelly Kelly.
No, well, it is what it is. But can we talk about Piper, though, man?
Oh, God, and in let's Piper, oh, my God.
Like, this guy, he has never broken kayfabe ever in his life, I feel like. He's always, like, to this day, he'll be like, I should have beat Hogan and Mr. T. Mr. T's a pussy, da-da-da-da-da. Like, it doesn't matter if he's in a wheelchair, last breath, he'll be like, F you, Hulk Hogan. Like, I just love everything about Roddy. And Roddy got in Ali's face. I mean, the man got in Ali's face before Ali became like what he is today with all the shakes and everything. This is Ali who can still function. And, I mean, he took a fake punch from Ali. But still, who has balls getting Muhammad Ali's face? I wouldn't get in Muhammad Ali's face today.
Yes. Yes. Even him shaking like that.
Yeah, absolutely. He still would knock me out. Everybody be like, the champ is back. all the headlines be reading tomorrow. I feel bad for Orndorff and Orton and Snuka here in this match, though.
Well, but they did their part, and they did their part as well.
Yeah.
And Orndorff was good. You know, he was a great partner. And, you know, again, it was spectacle, but there was a match, and there was a pretty decent tag team match for what this time period was. It was a really good tag team match. But all the spectacle, that just made it even more exciting than everything.
Oh, yeah. 100 times exciting. The only reason I feel bad for them is because I feel like people tend to forget that they were involved. Because always hear about Ali and Liberace, Hogan, Mr. T, Piper. And then laughed at that. It's kind of like, who else is there? Let me look it up real quick.
Well, it's hard to I think, forget Orndorff and Orton because... They, you know, they're part of the finish.
Yeah, they absolutely are. Yeah.
It's really Snuka that I think gets the bad end of the stick.
Yeah.
There's like the only time I really actually remember he's kind of in there is when he like all of a sudden gets on the top rope for whatever reason.
I remember that it was really awkward. Like, wait,
it's like he was about to do a diving thing on Orton, but then Orton saw, like, ran away.
He's like, oh, man, there goes my WrestleMania moment. Let me get back down.
I'll have to wait for The Undertaker to bury me in a couple years.
Poor Snuka.
But you know what? It was a great finish, and, you know, I think it's one of the big reasons why WrestleMania 1 was so successful, because it was... great main event and a great finish to it.
Right, and Hogan was a champ at this time. And I give kudos to WWF for arranging this kind of all-star match to really sell WrestleMania. And, you really didn't have to have the belt in play here, which is like something that all the pay-per-views today hinge on the belt at some point, unless you're CM Punk and you're not John Cena. But I'm really glad that they were able to sell the match so well, and like people just like tuned into this just because of the names and Hogan and everything, and I feel like it was a satisfying ending to the night.
I do too. So final ratings for WrestleMania 1. I'll let you go first, sir.
Okay, out of 10?
Yeah.
WrestleMania 1. Hogan's in it, so that's like 5 points there. I'm gonna go ahead and say I'd give this a good 8 out of 10 for a first effort. I feel like it was very high. The things I could have done without, would have been Bruno's kid. I didn't need to see that match. And the John Studd Giant match, like I said, I did enjoy it, even though it didn't seem realistic, even from a wrestling standpoint. I probably could have done without that, too. But otherwise, I'd say an 8 out of 10 for sure.
I'll agree with you, 8 out of 10. There's... couple stinkers there, but most of the matches are as good as advertised, if not better. And, you know, in particular with WrestleMania, you need, you know, as advertised are matches that are main events at any other pay-per-view. So if it's as good as advertised as far as being at WrestleMania, then it's a really good match. And if it's even better, it's an extraordinary, possibly legendary match.
Yes.
So... yeah, the matches that were even better than advertised have become legend, with Hulk Hogan and Mr. T versus Piper and Orndorff, and the same can be said for the Tag Team Championship match. Andre the Giant's match has become that, but I think that's only because of Andre the Giant. And the other matches were as good as advertised and were just fun matches to watch. For a first effort, it was really, really good, 8 out of 10.
And so. One thing I had in my notes from this morning... I really was shocked by not shocked by how active the crowd was so much, but how big the crowd was on Junkyard Dog, like, period. Like, he was just in the ring, and they're like, ah, and they're screaming. I mean, he lost the match, and then he won the match, and they're just happy for him. And like, Junkyard was so over that he was like 1980s Daniel Bryan, almost.
<Yep. laughs> Well, that's it for our review of WrestleMania 1. Clint, thank you so much. You want to let people know where they can find you?
Yes, I do. All my wrestling stuff tends to be on TricycleOffense.com. So you can just Google Tricycle Offense. You can't remember that. And then I have my own personal website, b-com, b-h-y-p-h-e-n, has my music. And I just released my debut album a few weeks ago, and has all my wrestling articles and has my daily blog posts and stuff, which I try to keep as entertaining as possible. So that's where you can find me mostly.
People, check out CM Punk Georgia Funk. It's still one of my favorite songs. I love that song.
Well, thank you. Thank you very, very much. Because I wrote that after like
WrestleMania 28?
No, I wrote that in 2011. It was before WrestleMania 28. This is right after the pipe bomb, essentially. And yeah. I just was inspired by CM Punk, and I was like, I really want to kind of write this song like in his honor without it being like complete, like, I made this for you, Punk. And but yeah, I really appreciate that, because I think you might be the first person to say that that was one of your favorite songs of mine. So thank you, man.
You're very welcome. I mean, you guys listen to his music. He has a lot of flair and a lot of homages to wrestlers. He puts a lot of wrestlers in his lyrics, so it's fun to listen to. I know. I listened to one of the recent ones, and it was talking about how I'm gonna go out like Punk.
Yes, I did. I sure did.
Yeah. So, and of course, remember to, if you have any comments about this episode or anything, there are several ways you can contact the show. You can email us at absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. You can leave us a comment on our Facebook page, which you can find by going to www.facebook.com and searching for the Absolution Network. And, of course, you can always leave a comment on the website itself. You can find at www.an.132productions.com. Also remember to check out all the other 132 Productions content, which includes the Shaft Plus podcast, all the stuff here on the Absolution Network, CMGU Wrestling Reviews, Tom's Prerogative, the Otaku Momentum, Tokyo SOS podcast over at www.tokyosos.132productions.com, and of course Comic Book Crazy, which will be soon relaunching. Hexcast and Spectacular Web, which you can find over at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. And, of course, remember to check out all our friends on the sideboard, which includes Tricycle Offense, Michael Bailey's Views from the Long Box, Brad Douglas' Spider-Man Crawlspace, Steven Spector's Major Spoilers Podcast, and Scott Gardner's Two Freaks Podcasting Network, among many more. Check them out. So that is it for this episode of CMGU's Wrestling Reviews. Next week, we go to WrestleMania 14. Because we need the baddest man on the planet to review some stuff. So, until next time, my wrestling fans, remember one thing. I'm the best Jew in the world!
You're all that I have and you're all that I need. Every day I pray to get to know ya. Please wanna be close to you. Yes, I'm so hungry. You're like water for my soul when it gets thirsty. Without you, there's no me or the air that I breathe. Sometimes the world is dark and I just can't see. With these demons around all around, bring me down to negative vibes. But I believe, yes, I believe. I say that I believe. I stand on my feet, one knee, brought down on one knee. I fight with all of my might and get these demons to flee. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in. I believe Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in. I believe how the darkness comes light, twilight and to the heights. Crown lights burning up, out of the twilight. So thank you to my God, now I finally got it right. And I fight with all of my heart and all of my soul and all of my mind. What's this feeling? My love will be falling and ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being. And I sing to my God songs of love and healing. I want Mashiach now. Time it starts a feeling. What's this feeling? My love will be falling and ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being. And I sing to my God songs of love and healing. I want Mashiach now. With the legs and reveal your soul. You gotta give yourself up and then you become whole. You're a slave to yourself and I don't even know. Your mother's a little fast life but you're grateful.